all Jussie all the time? No, sir. We've got Mueller. We've got bump stocks. We've got a 2020 update. We've got a new holiday. You heard it here first, the Power Hour. Listen and learn on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president. Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, is interested in preserving the fabric of America.
Welcome back to The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. This is your host, Scott D. Cosenza. Thank you so much for listening. Okay, we're going to do Mueller first. You know, Tim and I recorded a special edition podcast called the Mueller Report, so we're not going to go so heavy on Mueller today, but I just wanted to say that I'm continually surprised by the non-delight by so many on the left that the president is not a Russian spy or otherwise heavily compromised in that area. You'd think if you had a genuine concern that was the case, you'd be a little bit more rejoicing that, in fact, he's not an agent of Vladimir Putin. I think the focus going forward should be on how the story got started and sold. And there's two factors or tracks on that. Number one is the political players who set the ball in motion and sold the hoax. Yes, a different hoax. We'll get to the Chicago hoax in a minute. But sold that hoax. This was a prepackaged hoax, starting out as a way to avoid the sad fact that those who had supported Hillary Clinton came up snake eyes, that they're supportive of the most corrupt presidential candidate in our history, lost to Donald Trump. But then the real conspiracy started. The real conspiracy involves the Steele dossier, the FISA warrants, and all that business. And we can't call the chapter of collusion complete until we get to the bottom of it. So I look forward to the subpoenas and the testimony that comes to find out who created and marketed this hoax to the American people or to the journalists. And that brings us to the second point. While they weren't in it for a political power first, I think, although giving the Democrats and progressives more power is just sort of a natural bonus for them, they were in it for their own power and their own money. So much of it is fake news. It's one of the main reasons why Liberty Nation, in fact, was created. Seeing all these fake news reports over and over again, just lying through their teeth. And here is not a conservative or libertarian, but a down-and-out progressive calling it like it is on the number one network of progressives. If you know a progressive and they seem to sort of have cognitive dissonance over this story, this might help explain a lot. This is Glenn Greenwald, a noted progressive and hater of Donald Trump, a leftist. This is what he has to say about the media's coverage and MSNBC in particular.
I think before it slips from collective memory, we should just restate once again that you, a liberal, were denounced as a Russian agent by other liberals. What was that like?
It was exactly what you would expect it to be. And I mean, it wasn't just Howard Dean. It was continuously on MSNBC, which, let me just say, should have their top host on prime time go before the cameras and hang their head in shame and apologize for lying to people for three straight years, exploiting their fears to great profit. These are people who are on the verge of losing their jobs. That whole network was about to collapse. This whole scam saved them. And not only did they constantly feed people for three straight years total disinformation, they did it on purpose, Tucker. And the proof of that is that unlike you, who has been criticized in a lot of different ways by the left, some of which I agree with and we've talked about before, the first time I ever watched your show, you had on Adam Schiff, the leading Democrat, to talk about on your set for 12 straight minutes collusion so that your audience could hear the other side of the story. MSNBC did the exact opposite. There was a whole slew, not just me, of left-wing journalists with very high journalistic credentials, far more than anyone on that network, like Matt Taibbi and Jeremy Scahill and many others, including myself, who were banned from the network because they wanted their audience not to know that anybody was questioning or expressing skepticism about the lies and the scam they were selling because it was so profitable. They did it on purpose. It was a total fraud that they perpetrated on their audience. And to the extent that they talked about this at all, it was to call us agents of the Russian government, to defame us as traitors, and to lie about us continuously to their audience. And there's still no accountability. They still won't put us on their airwaves. They still won't apologize. And they're still lying to their audience. They don't want their audience to know what they did to them for three straight years on purpose.
If you don't have anybody on ever that says they disagree with you in a meaningful way, well, we know that, that's a palace guard, not a kind of search for new information or truth or anything other than that. It's driving a message. Unless you think this is an anomaly or a one-off, a story came out yesterday by this guy called Yashar Ali. Now, Mr. Ali is a journalist who got a scoop about the timing of the first Democrat Party presidential primary debate in Miami, Florida. He was running down that story, as a good journalist does, asked for confirmation from the DNC. After he did so, he got a call from Daphna Linzer. She is the managing editor of politics or political coverage for both NBC News and MSNBC News. And the purpose of her call was to bully him into delaying the publication of the story on the dates. Now, to be clear, it wasn't that she was trying to make him wait so that she or her news network, or the multiple networks that she represents, could publish this scoop. No, no, no. It was to bury it in order to work on behalf of the DNC. She called on behalf of the DNC because they wanted to be the ones who make the announcement and call local officials like you would do. Well, that's not the work of a proper news person. That's the work of a party operative. And so it's going on right now, today, with the MSNBC and NBC News heads. That's what we're talking about. Daphna Linzer, working today as a DNC operative. It's all politics all the time. You know, even with the Jussie Smollett thing, Rahm Emanuel, who been by and large saying good things in terms of the travesty of justice that took place in Chicago, couldn't leave it be without a dig at President Trump and another lie about President Trump's support for racists, which again is a lie. He hasn't done it, and no one has been able to put anything forward that says that he does it, excepting, of course, their own unsupported statements that he is a racist. The lie, the damnable lie that Trump says there are some good people who are white nationalists or neo-Nazis was repeated by Tim Kaine, U.S. Senator, by Chris Coombs, U.S. Senator, that we played on this program a couple weeks ago, and Rahm Emanuel continues the libel, the defamation, in his Jussie Smollett comments.
Look, I've always said from day one, this is a Trump-free zone, the city of Chicago, and I mean it. Let me be really clear about something. The only reason Jussie Smollett thought he could take advantage of a hoax about a hate crime is for the environment, the toxic environment that Donald Trump created. This is a president who drew a moral equivalency between people who are trying to perpetuate bigotry and those who are trying to fight bigotry. As somebody who started his own journey on politics, fighting the neo-Nazis in Skokie and then down to Marquette Park, President Trump should literally take his politics, move it aside. He's created a toxic environment. Now he's created a toxic, vicious cycle, in my view. The only reason Jussie Smollett thought he could get away with this hoax about a hate crime is because of the environment President Trump created. When we go back to Virginia, This is a person who said, and I quote, there are good people on both sides. Well, let me break the news to the president. There are not good people on both sides. People who perpetuate, advance the causes of hate. I say this as a Jewish American who knows what that means. My recommendation is the president go to opening day baseball, sit on the sideline, stay out of this. You created a toxic environment, and all of us who are trying to make sure that we share a set, common set of values that embrace and welcome people of all walks of life and backgrounds.
I find it absolutely breathtaking that Rahm Emanuel thinks it's okay to call the city of Chicago a Trump-free zone. Can you imagine an American mayor of one of the big five, top five or ten cities in America that was populated mainly by Republicans saying that their city was an Obama-free zone during the Obama presidency? Well, why is it less outrageous to say that it's a Trump-free zone? And then, of course, we have the toxic environment that Trump has created. Talk about the pot calling the kettle black. Mr. Rahm Emanuel's creating this toxic environment by lying about the president being a racist and continuing to press that claim. So, for the record, again, Donald Trump did not say that there were some good people who were white supremacists in Charlottesville. All he said was that you can be a good person and think that Civil War memorial statuaries should remain standing and available on display in public parks. He also said that you can be a good person and think that they should be taken down. That's it. You want to call him a racist? Fine. Show me the proof. Here's the proof that he's not.
You're changing history, you're changing culture, and you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. Now, in the other group also, you had some fine people.
How could he be more clear? Who created this toxic environment, Rahm? Look in the mirror. Well, what the hell did happen with Jussie Smollett? Here we go.
Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor. The rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
This is the work of Kim Fox and Joe Maggots, her deputy. She's the Cook County State's Attorney. And just to correct some misinformation that's out there and her outright lies, she's continuing to lie in her op-ed published late Friday night in the Chicago Tribune, where she kind of tried to justify the disgusting actions of her office. So a couple things in terms of the lies. Number one, she writes, in the interests of full transparency, I would prefer these records be made public. However, in this case, Illinois law allows defendants in certain circumstances to request that public records remain sealed. Smollett chose to pursue that avenue, so my office is barred from releasing those records without his approval. Okay, well, that's all true. Here's the lie. Her office did not oppose the request when Smollett's team made it. So, it's up to the judge to rule on that request. The defense has to ask for it, and then the prosecution gets a chance to weigh in and say, no, Your Honor, we object to the sealing of these records because of the strong public interest in releasing them. But they didn't do that. They didn't oppose the motion. So it's a lie to suggest, oh, well, our hands are just tied in this area. Did you do anything at all to lift a finger to see the records be released? No, you didn't, and you're lying about it today. The second lie is one we've just learned about towards the end of the week, which is the recusal lie. She said that she recused herself from the case because she had contact with Jussie's relative and Ms. Chen, the former Michelle Obama chief of staff, who we believe was one of the people who sort of made the phone call to get the fix in for Mr. Smollett, and she said that she recused herself. Well, we now learn that she didn't recuse herself. She did this invented thing that she calls an in-office recusal, where basically she goes around the office and says, I'm not going to be in charge of this anymore. Somebody else is, so don't talk to me about it. Well, the problem for that is, let's say I'm your boss, and you know that I want somebody who's being prosecuted by the office to not be prosecuted by the office, or the opposite, that I do want them prosecuted because of some interest of mine. Are you going to make a, can that person, the potential accused, rely on you to make a fair judgment about that, knowing that the boss of the office has this stated interest in one particular outcome for the case? Of course not. It's ridiculous. And so what real recusal in the person of the Cook County State's Attorney's Office means is that office no longer handles that investigation or prosecution. It's handled by a different office. That's not what was done here. It was a recusal without a recusal in order to benefit Mr. Smollett. Well, another one for the record here is, you know, Jussie is going about talking about how he's been a victim and he's still innocent. And just for the record, for anybody who's still not clear, even though they did drop the charges, Joe Maggots, her second, had this to say about Jussie's guilt or innocence.
Does dropping the charges vindicate him?
No.
Does it exonerate him?
No.
Do you believe that he is innocent?
I do not believe he's innocent.
So we can keep that on file for the inevitable claims in the future about how he didn't do anything, and that's why they dropped the charges. And to be clear, that's exactly what happened. They did drop the charges. So while it we know that he did it, or reasonably know to the extent that we can through published reports, not having been there, it's true that he's legally innocent, by the way. Mr. Smollett, like every other person who has never been convicted of that crime, is in fact innocent of it, legally speaking. That's about a legal standard, though. It's not about the truth.
You know, at first it was a thing of like, listen, if I tell the truth, then that's it, because it's the truth. Then it became a thing of like, oh, how can you doubt that? Like, how do you not believe that? It's the truth. And then it became a thing of like, oh, it's not necessarily that you don't believe that this is the truth. You don't even want to see the truth.
The truth now, as Jussie Smollett and his attorneys would have us believe, is that two men who he was pretty good friends with and had employed and palled around with, who he had just spoken to moments before on the telephone, attacked him at 2 a.m. on a freezing cold night wearing white face, which is to say they're black gentlemen, and he had no idea who they were. So you get to choose who to believe, what to believe, every single piece of physical evidence and testimony, or the words of Jussie Smollett, the hero victim survivor of this attack, who then pushed hard as could be for placement on ABC's interview slot, where he wore the regalia of his politics, the black power fist combined with the rainbow accoutrement to represent his gayness, so he could get the twin being put upon for being black and victimized for being black in this racist society, and then put upon for being homosexual and denigrated for that, even though that's where he's elevated from. That's where his power comes from. It's a lie that it's somehow a cost to him. It's all benefit to him. And that's why he's been able to hoax and lie his way to this point. Now, I typically have a pro-defense a posture when it comes to measures of or matters of criminal justice, rather, because, but my God, has there ever been a clearer case? Well, that evidence should be put forth in court. They should bring their charges. One of the most important things in a sort of plea agreement, if there were an actual plea agreement, by the way, instead of what happened, which was just them dropping the charges for the sum of $10,000 payment, would be an allocution, an apology, part of the process, part of taking responsibility. That's what one of the things that we allow criminal defendants to do, with letting them off with something less than the full might of that the law allows. Ms. Fox, in her lying op-ed, says, "Our criminal justice system is at its best when jails are used to protect us from the people we rightly fear." while alternative outcomes are reserved for the people who make us angry but need to learn the error of their ways without seeing their lives irrevocably destroyed. Well, that sounds great. I can't imagine not supporting that, and I would hope you and everyone else would support that. But where is the error of his ways? The man walked out of the courtroom, walked straight to the lobby of the courthouse in front of the cameras, and called himself innocent. Where's the contrition? That, by the way, is how you know that she's in on the fix. Because she should at least, let's say she approached it with a clean conscience and just, you know, the will to do well by her position and fulfill her oath of office in her city, and really did think that because some non-famous low-level people get felony charges downgraded or some other deal where they don't have to pay the harsh penalties involved in a felony, that's fine. But she would then be outraged to hear him go in front of the cameras and call himself innocent and say that he's been truthful since day one, when in fact he's been anything but truthful since day one. Well, hopefully the investigation will continue at the federal level and evidence will be presented in a court that he'll have to contend with. And we'll see. Is the world right, or is Jussie and his paid lawyers right? Kamala Harris, 2020 presidential contender and U.S. Senator from California, was confused by the charges. Let's recall that in January, when he made his fake charges, perhaps in furtherance of her anti-lynching bill to get some kind of credibility as a legislator before she announced her presidential bid, said that Jussie Smollett, quote, is one of the kindest, most gentle human beings I know. She's praying for his quick recovery. That was for the scratch on his face, the little tiny scratch. This was an attempted modern-day lynching. No one should have to fear for their life because of their sexuality or color of their skin. We must confront this hate. Indeed, we must confront this hate. Of course, it's Jussie Smollett's hate for you and I, for America, for every person that's white and not a leftist, that really must be confronted. What's Kamala's reaction now?
To be perfectly honest with you, Wolf, I'm completely confused. I don't understand. I don't know. I don't know the underlying evidence. I have, you know, there's a sealed document, obviously. I don't know. I'm at a loss. I think we're going to have to leave it up to the judgment of the prosecutor. I think we should leave it up to the judgment of the police chief and the mayor, of course, to give us some better sense of what's going on. I don't know.
Well, the police chief and the mayor say the fix is in and that the prosecutor acted horribly, inappropriately. But the prosecutor says she acted all right. So which is it, Kamala? This person, by the way, spent her career as a prosecutor in San Francisco. No opinion now that your buddy turned the country upside down with his fake hoax? Really? Just confused? Ha ha ha. Oh, Jussie's attempt to get himself more money and fame and perhaps buoy his friend's political aspirations now turn against her. She's running for the black primary, don't forget. She's positioning herself as an African-American, even though she's not, and she wants that black primary vote, and so she has to be super careful about how she handles this. It'll be funny to see her tiptoeing on eggshells as the story and Jussie's obvious guilt continues to reveal itself. Well, let's go to a full 2020 update, and joining us is Tim Donner, former co-host of The Uprising. You know, Tim, you're the former co-host of The Uprising, but you keep appearing on The Uprising all the time. And I was prepared to announce your transition. We were going to be happy to have you rejoin the show as the official Joe Biden contributor. And along that lines, you had provided for us the white guy audio tape, which I will play in a minute for the listeners. Goodness. But that has been eclipsed. That has certainly been eclipsed by recent events in candidate vice president, former past vice president Joe Biden and future presidential candidate Joe Biden. There is some big news. So welcome back to The Uprising in your capacity as the Biden reporter. This news may shorten the duration of your job
So give us a report. What's going on with Uncle Joe from Delaware?
Well, as you know, Scott, I have many obligations in my life, but I'm now weighing the real possibility of renouncing all of them in order to devote my exclusive attention to being the Joe Biden correspondent for the uprising. I take it that seriously. But I don't know which is worse. I mean, he's the gift that keeps on giving. And this soundbite that you're going to play of him renouncing his white heritage and saying that white guys are the problem, even though he's been the quintessential corporatist white guy for a long time, he's now played right into the white guy thing with this latest story from New York Magazine, of all places. And, you know, this title of, you know, America's creepy uncle, creepy Uncle Joe, it was kind of endearing, I think, to the left until now, because he was always get away with it because he was basically harmless as
vice president. It seemed like they had an affect of just like, yeah, well, that's just Joe. You just kind of whatever.
Yeah, you know, that's just Joe being Joe.
He's a little creepy, but it's a misdemeanor rather than a felony, basically.
Well, on the left, I think he's a creep, but you know, he's our creep. But as vice president, he was not a Dick Cheney. He was not an influential vice president. He was basically a yes man out there doing what he does best, talking a blue streak to support Obama, making multiple malaprops that, you know, form the basis of, you know, we could just go on forever How about asking the guy to stand up who was in the wheelchair?
Yeah. Wait a minute.
No. You can't control the flow of information. You've named me the official Joe Biden correspondent. Now, Scott, let me do my job.
Excuse me.
I mean, the litany of things, the clean and articulate will stand in infamy. Whatever clean means when he was describing Barack Obama, apparently it was endearing to Barack because he made him his vice president. Asking the guy to stand who was in a wheelchair, or saying that, you know, may a woman rest in peace, when she was in fact standing right there in the audience. I'm not sure she was actually standing, but he had to go, oh, whoops, I forgot that was your father that died, not your mother. But the point is that there's now been a very specific allegation made against him by a woman named Lucy Flores in New York Magazine. She was running for lieutenant governor of Nevada. And when she was getting ready to go on stage in 2014, Joe Biden came up behind her, kissed her on her hair. And it was, by her account, a rather long kiss. And she felt completely humiliated by the whole thing, somehow kept it together and then made the speech. But my point is that, you know, all this endearing, oh, that's just Joe being Joe, you know, that's over now. If he's going to run for president, these kind of stories are going to come out big time. And honestly, you know, I think he won't be able to resist the lure of seeing his name at the top of the polls among the, 16 candidate Democratic field.
Let me ask you to stop right there and answer this question for me. We have stopped the presses, by the way, on the Uprising podcast in order to get this segment in. So I just want to say that's our commitment to the people, Tim, with this late breaking news.
This is why I take it so seriously.
And it's Saturday morning as we record this. Did Dr. Jill Biden start Saturday morning with a strong cup of Joe for Joe to sit him down and say, is there somebody close to him, Tim, who's going to, because I agree with you. You said that, you know, he wants to see his name at the top of the marquee. And I agree. That's been his goal for 30 years, is to see his name as president of the United States. But is somebody close enough to him? Like, let's say if it were your political career, I might be one of the people close enough to you to say, hey, listen, this, you can't go on. You're going to.
I believe you did that a few times when I was running for the United States Senate, Scott.
By the way, I think I've seen you give maybe not hundreds, but certainly dozens and dozens of political speeches. At no time did I see anyone smell your hair or kiss your head before.
Yeah, I missed that experience. And now I'm kind of jealous, you know.
But is there somebody in his universe, Tim, who is going to sit him down on this Saturday morning and say, you know, you have a pretty good legacy right now? I mean, it's a little bit tainted with the stuff, but by and large, it's and if you drop out, that's not going to be the focus of the legacy. But if you go forward, this is what everybody's going to be talking about. It's going to be story after story. And as a matter of fact, I will now play the clip from him talking about Anita Hill.
She was abused through the hearing. She was taken advantage of. Her reputation was attacked. I wish I could have done something. I opposed Clarence Thomas' nomination. I voted against him. But I also realized there was a real and perceived problem the committee faced. There were a bunch of white guys. No, I mean it sincerely, a bunch of white guys. To this day, I regret I couldn't come up with a way to get her the kind of hearing she deserved. Nearly 30 years later, and I publicly apologized to Anita because she didn't get the hearing she deserved. We all have an obligation to do nothing less than change the culture in this country, a white man's culture. It's got to change.
It's like he was like a bystander in the hearing rather than one of the key players in the committee. I wish I could have done something. You wish you could have done something.
You were on the committee. And Scott, you know how closely I follow politics and have for my whole life. That has to rank in the top three or top five, maybe the top all time craven political remark. I mean, it's white guy's culture.
Yeah.
You got to change it. Oh, by come voting, on. Are you kidding me?
By voting for a white guy for president. So
now you asked me.
Let me get back to the question, though. Is that happening? Is there somebody, is it having a come to Jesus moment today?
I think in most of these cases, and I think it's true with Donald Trump, too, the only person who you could count on to make that statement and make it stick and make Biden understand is Dr. Jill Biden, is his wife. I think maybe what she should do, Scott, is walk up to her husband and say, Joe, if you keep doing that, I'm going to put y'all back in chains.
From the field. Tim Donner, Joe Biden correspondent for The Uprising. Thank you so much for joining us, Tim. Maybe we'll see you next week.
It's been, frankly, Scott, a guilty pleasure.
I know I've said it before. I have to say it again. One of the things I hate about these made up lies about President Trump is that he's attackable on real things that happened, true facts that he has undertaken. I mean, take attention away from that to deal with these hoaxes. With that in mind, let me attack the president right now. This is the bump stock story. As of midnight on Tuesday, owners of bump stock devices became felons subject to a maximum penalty of 10 years in federal prison and a $250,000 fine. That's not because a new law was passed, but because President Trump, with the stroke of his pen, just decided to change a rule in the Code of Federal Regulations that had previously determined that a certain device was not a machine gun. And he just made it a machine gun, which are highly regulated, and it is a felon to possess them without all kinds of special permissions. Where's the due process? Forgetting for a moment that this will yield no safety benefit to the country, what about the people who will be arrested now or have had their property destroyed or have to destroy it? That's the legal pathway, by the way. If you own one of these things, you should destroy it immediately if you don't want to potentially suffer the consequences of being in illegal possession of them, which is bad enough if you happen to own one and you spend $150 for it. But what if you had a truckload of them?
All day Tuesday, federal agents with the TABC watched on as thousands of banned bump stocks were shredded at a facility in North Texas. Fort Worth-based RW Firearms, one of the country's largest bump stock retailers, turning over its entire stock of some 60,000 to be destroyed.
Now, they don't get any money back for that. They had, just call it a widget, they had $60,000 worth of, not dollars worth, they're worth much more than a dollar a piece. They had 60,000 units. They sell for hundreds of dollars. It's a seven-figure seizure a theft committed by the Trump administration against this company and against everyone who owned one of these devices. They want to make a device illegal. They should have to buy it at the very least. But the better course is to not make it illegal at all, to not violate the due process rights of Americans, to say nothing of the Second Amendment rights of Americans, for no safety benefit. It's the kind of pandering I would expect from a Clinton presidency, not a Trump presidency. It's entirely, I believe, violative of the Constitution on multiple levels, in addition to being just poor form, to yield to irrational demands in the gun rights area, which we know most of those demands are. They're not grounded in any sense of what will actually make Americans safer or how guns operate in a mechanical way. It's based on emotion. And Trump joins that emotion with this bump stock ban, and it's unacceptable. All right, well, that'll just about do it for us this week. Thanks to special correspondent Tim Donner. You know, the last story I want to talk about here very quickly is Earth Hour. And I want to invent a new holiday or a new observance. And this has to do with Earth Hour. Earth Hour started, I don't know, 20 years ago or so, when the idea is for 1 hour of the year, you don't use electricity, you turn your lights off to benefit the Earth. And it shows our reverence to the Earth and how we're supportive of the Earth for not using energy. It is, not to get all crazy Randian, but it's absolutely anti-human, anti-progress, and anti-Earth. It's about people who want to see us return to caves or exploit all the new laws and regulations they would get to pass for them or their friends. So that's what Earth Hour is. And I suggest Power Hour. What's Power Hour, you might ask? Well, it's right in the name. It's the opposite of Earth Hour. From 8:30 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, March 30th, you turn on every light in your house. You turn on your car lights, you turn on flashlights, skylights, any light you have. All right. Thanks so much for joining. This has been The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. Please like, comment, and subscribe, and visit LibertyNation.com for 24/7 conservatarian news and analysis. Thanks for listening.